kind of exciting. You know, I view this time today in geometrical setting in the same way that in the 1920s, Cartan invented Cartan geometry. There's a generalization of Cartan geometry, and I think physics is going to find a use for it. So my motivation is I'm quantum gravity. So what does it mean? Is it, you know, because gravity is a theory of dynamical geometry, I do believe that quantum gravity is not simply fields on the usual space-time. Quantum gravity is going to lead to a profound refoundation of our notion of space-time and geometry, and this is what I'm looking at. So quantum gravity is very hard, we don't have it. So I want to step back a little bit and say, well, what could be the geometrical elements, you know, of some effective description of quantum gravity? What are the key ideas that quantum gravity have to put together? And it leads to this idea that, you know, you can think of quantum gravity as a form of unification. Now, what's interesting is that when I say unification, depending on what's your training, you're going to think different things. So let's say for a long while, the most dominant way of what it means that quantum gravity is a unification, it's that it's a unification of forces, of gauge and gravity. Right. So if you're a particle physicist, you think that all you have to do is just put them together and then you're done. And here I want to translate that into geometrical language. So this is the geometry of gauge bundle, and then if you want Riemannian geometry, diffeomorphisms if you want. So let me look at this geometry from the point of view. I'm going to look at theories from the point of view of symmetries. Okay. So that's the first and most popular way to look at geometry. Now, if you're training quantum gravity, and that explains what I'm going to say, explains why there's so many different communities and there is such a sense of divergence. And what I want to have is bring somehow this divergent point of view into one, because I agree with Neil that what we need is convergence. And the divergence comes from what we think we're supposed to do. And we're supposed to do all these three things at once, I believe. And of course, all of us with different tools, we forget the two other parts of the problem. So if I as a quantum gravity, I was trained to think, and I believe for a long time that, and I still believe, that quantum gravity, no, that's not about unifications of force, it's unifications of quantum mechanics and gravity. Okay? And if you think about the geometrical setting, what it means is that the unification of phase-space geometry and Riemannian geometry. Okay, so if you think along these lines, you led to the idea of what I call relative locality. How is it possible to kind of put the geometry of space-time and the geometry of phase-space unifying setting? Okay, now you could think also that somehow there's maybe a deeper form of unification, which is that quantum gravity is kind of a unification of matter and geometry. And if you think that matter is mostly fermionic and geometry is mostly bosonic, so quantum gravity is about a profound form of unification of fermionic plus bosonic geometry. Okay, and I think, so this is, let's say, string theory type of perspective, this is quantum gravity type of perspective, and here this is more, non-commutative geometry perspective. We saw some element of that in Kirill Stokes, for instance, trying to, understand the fermions from a form perspective. So, and this is why I believe, of course, quantum gravity is going to it's supposed, once we have it, it's going to do all of these three things at once. And that's why it's not a small fix. It's not an epsilon fix. I believe it's something which is profoundly, revolutionary. So, okay, but how do we go from there? So can we work not at the fundamental level, but more at the geometrical level? So what are the geometrical elements that we have to put together, right? So if we look at the geometry of gravity, okay, so now I'm going to be a bit more mathematical, and I'm going to say that The main geometrical elements that we work with when we write down a Lagrangian and we write down a theory, it's always based on whether a Lie algebra is. So let's say if you're doing, I'm going to explain what a Lie algebra is. So if we're doing gravity, a Lie algebra is always associated to some kind of bundle that lives over your space-time. Okay, and then what we do is that we have fields that live in that bundle, you know, based on that space-time, and there's natural actions that we can write down, and the natural action we write down, we write them because of symmetry principle. Okay, so if you write down gravity, what is the bundle? The bundle that we're interested in is T of M, okay? The tangent bundle, that's the bundle that carries the symmetry group. I'm looking more at the symmetry bundle, and that bundle has a differential structure, which is a bracket, okay? And the base in gravity, the base is equipped with a metric. It turns out that this metric is not really symmetric under the symmetry of the bundle, okay? So that's the simplest thing, is that if you have a manifold, you have a differentiable structure, which means that you have vector fields and you know how to compute commutator vector fields. This is the Cartan geometry. Before you put metrics or field or whatever, you need a differentiable structure. You need a bracket. This is GR. Now, if you look at gauge, so in gauge theory, you have also a bundle. This is, that would be your vector bundle, or it could be your principal bundle. Now, I'm interested into the concept of infinitesimal symmetry, and engage the corresponding bundle that is interesting. It's called the ITA bundle. It's essentially, if you have a gauge bundle, let's say B over M, the ITA bundle is essentially that you look at the tangent version of it. So you define a bundle E, which is TB. Maybe you can define by the right, you divide by the right action, but what's important about that bundle is essentially that you have your tangent bundle, it projects onto the so you have the tangent space of the tangent bundle of the total space. Then there's the vertical bundle here, which is essentially the Lie algebra over your manifold. Okay, and then you know it always every time you have a bundle, there's always kind of an exact sequence like that, where you have your total bundle, there's a notion of a horizontal vector, which is how you move. Okay, so you have a projection onto the base. That projection is called the anchor map, and the vertical direction is what controls here the gauge symmetry. Okay, so here in gauge symmetry, what do you have? You still have, on the total bundle, you have a bracket, which is really now the Lie bracket of your gauge transformation, and you also have what I'm saying, you have also what's called an anchoring map, and what's happening is that the gauge transformation are essentially, you know, vectors in that bundle that projects to zero. So bear with me, it's a bit more of an abstraction because you have to understand, but it's kind of a very general structure, right? You always have, and we see the key elements of everything we need to construct an action. We need some bundles, we need some brackets, some differential structure, and we need some way to map it onto the base, right? So this is gauge. And then quantum mechanics. So usually people forget quantum mechanics, where you try to unify these two. But I think it's very important to put also quantum mechanics. So if you have quantum mechanics, what do you have? There's a very natural bundle associated with quantum mechanics. It's called the causal bundle. Oh, OK. And essentially, it's very simple. If you have quantum mechanics, what do you have? You have a notion of Poisson bracket, right? So you can compute. And a Poisson bracket is associated with a bivector field, dBg, right? Now, if you have a bivector field pi, let's call it p. If you have a bivector field p, you can think of p as giving you a map from t star of m to tm. This is essentially the Hamiltonian map. You give me an Hamiltonian h, I construct a form, and you know p of dh gives me an Hamiltonian flow. This is kind of Noether theorem. You know, to every flow, there is a conserved charge. Okay, so that's the geometry of quantum mechanics. The quantum mechanics means that The geometry of quantum mechanics means that you have an identification, or you have a projection, you have an identification of the cotangent bundle, the space of forms, the space of Hamiltonian, with your tangent bundle that creates flows. Okay? So, and here too, interestingly, so here the bundle is T star of M, okay? And we just have an anchor. The anchor is just simply something that takes a form and take the corresponding Hamiltonian vector field. Okay, that's the usual thing we use in quantum mechanics. And the bracket, it's very interesting, it's called the causal bracket. So this one you may never have seen in that form, but the bracket is a bracket that, so if alpha and beta are 2-1 form, and I have a then there's a bracket which in fact give that bundle the structure of a Lie algebraoid. I'm going to write down the axiom, which is essentially that you take the Lie derivative along P alpha of beta minus the interior product of pi beta of D alpha. Okay? That's a bracket which you can check satisfies Jacobi identity and satisfies what's called the Leibniz rule.
Sorry, say again, what's the second term?
It's the interior product. So this is a form. Yeah. Alpha is a form. This is a two form. Pi of alpha is a vector, and I just contract that vector with that two form. This is the interior product. Okay?
The interior product.
Sorry. The interior product, okay. It's just that, remember, the Lie derivative is I x d plus b.
Yeah, it's the French
interior. Interior, I don't know. Pardon my French. Okay.
Where alpha and beta leaves, what?
There are one forms, alpha and beta.
Over what? Over the total space or something?
No, there are one forms on M. Uh-huh. Okay. So let's say a basic example, suppose the causal bracket is, if you just take it for exact forms, then this is D of FG. Okay, that's the causal bracket. Okay?
Laurent, why do you call this thing, what is the meaning of algebraic as opposed
yes.
to infinite?
Yes, so let me now say, so what I'm saying is that whether you do GR, it's like Monsieur Jourdain, you know, you always do prose without knowing you're doing it. What I'm saying is that anytime you do gauge theory, gravity, or quantum mechanics, you're using these structures. You don't have to name them or be fancy about it, but you're using it. There are different structures. They're always the same. There's always a bracket. There's always a space of function. So there's always a Lie algebraoid. So what is a Lie algebraoid? So a Lie algebraoid would be it's a bundle over M, let's say, okay, which admits, so it's a bundle over M, which admits an anchoring map. That is a map that goes from E to PM and also admits a bracket. Okay, so it means that if I take sections of that bundle, I can compute the bracket of sections of that bundle. Okay, and now what are the axioms for that bracket? So, you know, axiom number one, the bracket has to satisfy Jacobi identity. Okay. So, plus, sorry, it's pedantic, but let me write it so that. Okay, axiom number two, it's called the Leibniz identity. That is, it's clear that if I have a section x, I can multiply that section by f of x, right? And where f is it's a function on my base, okay? So anytime we have a field, you know, there's the scalar fields are, the fields are modules over the scalar fields, okay? So I have to tell you how the bracket, is affected by that. And essentially, so there's a term which is linear, so bracket is linear. But now, you know, there's a differential, and this is where my anchoring map matters, because now I have to know how my field X is going to act on my function, and this is what the anchoring does, right? So I need something that takes a section and makes it into a differential operator. Okay? And then axiom number three is that the bracket is Q. So sometimes people even forget about it because this is self-obvious. That's what a Lie algebraoid is. Very simple, very generic, very robust. Every physical system has that. There is a bracket, and there's a way to anchor that bracket onto the base. Okay? It's a very universal structure. Now, in the case, I want to go into that, use that language and say, so now I want to kind of unify. I'm saying that I want to unify gravity, where the bundle is Tm, quantum mechanics, where the bundle is T star m, and gauge theory, where the bundle, let's say, is G, a Lie algebra. Okay? And somehow the Coleman mandula, so I'm going to give a geometrical version of Coleman mandula to see how we can go beyond it. That's the challenge. The challenge is somehow to beat Coleman mandula, but first I have to kind of, I'm not talking about the global Coleman mandula, I'm talking about a local version. So what's happening is, if you think about what's happening here, I just talked about the bracket, but in physics it's very important that there are metric in the system, so I haven't talked about that. So now, what's happening is that in the case of the gauge, it's very clear that there's a metric here, and that that this metric is compatible with the Lie algebra action, right? So in the case of the gauge theory, I have a metric, and then let's call it eta, it's a fiber metric, okay? And that fiber metric is satisfies the property that it's invariant under it's invariant under the Lie action, okay? And that's what allows me to write down the Young-Mills theory. Now I can, because I just said that for the Lie algebra bundle, my anchoring map is really vanishing, it vanishes. I can write that in a more general way, saying that, if I have a Lie algebraoid, having an invariant metric, this is what it would mean. It would mean that when I try, the scalar product of two sections is a function, and then I want my metric to be invariant. So for gauge theory, this is true.
You have too many eters on the right-hand side.
This is the derivative of yz.
Yeah, on the right-hand side, there's an eter inside the bracket.
It's
y. Z? Sorry.
It's a y.
Is it here?
No, sorry, I'm talking about the prefactor.
It's eta of...
It's the internal metric of that expression.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, okay. It's just invariance of a metric, yeah. Right? The bracket, the Killing metric is ad invariant. Okay, so now it turns out that if I try to think about what is the fiber metric for gravity and what is the fiber metric for T star of m, essentially this metric has to be 0, 0, and this one is the Killing metric, if you want. Okay, and the fact, in fact, this fact that somehow the fiber metric for gravitational along the Lie direction has to vanish is essentially kind of the geometrical version of Coleman mandula. So to phrase it, it means that if I want to unify these three structures, I want to have a bundle that at least contains Tm, T star of m, and G, okay? But also has a fiber metric, which satisfies this axiom, my fourth axiom, okay? Compatibility of that metric. Now you can. It's easy to show that if you just demand that, then it's obvious. What's obvious is essentially if you use this metric compatibility. But you also demand that it's valid for x, multiplied by a function, you're going to get an extra condition. And that condition essentially is going to tell you that the metric that you put on the fiber cannot be invertible. Okay? A more precise definition is that the field, it's either that pi x is equal to zero, so x belongs to the kernel of pi, and the kernel of pi is what you call the vertical direction, or the metric is degenerate. Okay? So this is kind of the Coleman-Mandula theorem. It's impossible to merge together in a symmetrical language diffeomorphism which are have horizontal with gauge. And then if it's true, then we're done. Like it's a no-go theorem. And Gérard was telling us, every no-go theorem is here to fall flat, right? So how does the can we overcome the Coleman-Mandula theorem? Can we overcome the impossibility to put together?
By saying something simple, you're saying that metric in the manifold is not invariant on the diffeomorphisms? Or you're saying something more complicated than that? If you put the metric on the manifold, then it's not invariant on the diffeomorphisms.
Yeah, but for a gauge bundle, it is. For the gauge algebra, it is. Yes. So what I'm saying is that it's not possible to put an invertible on the fiber, which is gauge invariant. And let's say, I'm going to say this is what I want to do. I want somehow to put everybody on the same footing, okay? And I want to see whether that's possible. So it means, okay, since I prove it's not possible, it means I have to relax one of the axioms, okay?
Can you explain a little better the anchoring map? So E is
yes.
Some bundle over M, and phi is an isomorphism or a...
So E, yeah, let's do that. So E is some bundle over M. So you have space of sections, let's say, EA would be a base of your sections, and this is a general section. A could be a gauge bundle or vector bundle or, you know. And then what is pi? Pi is a map. Pi of X is a map that takes these guys, A, and turns it into a differential operator. Okay? So it's a projection. It tells you which... At every point in your bundle, which directions of your bundle are horizontal and which one are vertical. Okay? And Coleman-Mandula essentially is the statement that this split is God-given, is absolute. I cannot make it dynamical. And unification for me is the language that I want, you know, requires this split to be a little bit, that you want to play a bit with this split. Okay?
But so the differential is on the base manifold or on the total space?
On the base manifold, always. You always move only on the base manifold. This is, so it's going to be, yeah, it's, okay, it's an idea, it's a, okay, maybe this idea goes back to, there's two ideas of unification. One is Kaluza-Klein that everybody knows. Another one where you have a big manifold and you reduce. Another one goes back to Einstein, in fact, which is, no, there's another way to unify is that instead of trying to reduce the total space, you extend the tangent bundle. And this is the one that works. Kaluza-Klein is not the one. So here what I'm saying is that I'm going to have a manifold M, and I want to think of E as some kind of generalized notion of tangent bundle, but that tangent bundle is bigger than, okay, if it's bigger, it means they're going to be vectors that are in the kernel of the anchoring map, but that's okay. This is what we're going to see. So for some reason, the paper by Einstein has less than 10 citations. It's bizarre. The paper by Kaluza-Klein has 300. You could say these are two equivalent possibilities. One has been overexplored and doesn't work. The other one has been completely underexplored. And in fact, this is this idea that led to generalized geometry. This idea that here what I want to do is, you see, when I'm talking about X, I'm just saying, let's generalize what I mean by tangent vector. Let's put the gauge direction into the tangent. Let's put the fermions. You know, let's just put everything as part of the geometry. And of course, you know, not all of them moves on the base. Okay?
When was Einstein's paper?
40s.
40s, Einstein and Meyer.
This is the time where everybody says Einstein was doing crap. I mean, if you read the paper of that man, it's just that, no, Einstein was 80 years in advance with his time. I think that's what was happening, right? And nobody understood why he was trying to do what he was trying to do. But the tools he developed at that time, I mean, he didn't have the mathematics to come through, right? Like, Lie algebra did not exist. So it was too much in advance. So, okay, so it means we have to let go of some of the axioms, okay? And here, it's very important because what I'm talking about the axioms that involve a bracket, that is the axiom of symmetry, okay? And we think that we know what symmetry is, and symmetries have to be based on Lie algebra. So this is where a quest started that got confused for a long time, and people say which axiom to let go, and for a long while, people tried to let go of Jacobi identity and make sense of it. But it's, you know, but it's very, in some sense, there's a way in which you can make sense of violating Jacobi identity, modulo cohomology, but it's cumbersome. In fact, the simplest axiom to let go of, that has no physical reason, is the symmetry axiom. Okay, this one is absolutely not necessary, and I'm going to explain you why. And in fact, so what you have to let go of, it's called that instead of building your notion of symmetry on something called Lie algebra, you have to replace it by a new algebraic notion, which is called a Lode algebra. Okay, and the Lode algebra is essentially something that has a bracket like that, that satisfies Jacobi identity or satisfies this identity, but does not necessarily satisfy the symmetry principle. So here, in order to allow me to have a metric, people have played with it. There's one thing that you should change this axiom into, and it's called the courant algebraoid. Okay, it's called a courant algebraoid. Or you can call a Dorfman algebraoid. The courant is the guy, that's the guy that got the name, but Dorfman is the woman, and she didn't get the name. But, okay, so let's. So it's accepted to call it a courant algebraoid, but it's really a Dorfman algebraoid. Anyway, so what you should say is that, okay, so let's say, I'm assuming that I have a metric. And I'm not no longer necessarily assuming that that guy is symmetric, but I want to assume that at least it's kind of there's kind of invariance property with the metric. Okay. Okay. So that's it. This is what a courant algebraoid is. Why this particular axiom? I guess it's because it works, and then we're going to see what it means. And then there are many examples, and then you can open up the geometry. What it means is that at every point above your manifold, you don't have a Lie algebra symmetry. You have a Lode algebra symmetry, which is very interesting because Lode algebra have an element that does the third thing, is that somehow it mixes bosonic symmetries and fermionic symmetry in a very interesting way. That is, every Lode algebra has an underlying a differential graded algebra. I won't have time to explain that, but somehow kind of, you know, by playing with the concept of symmetry, you open up a lot. So why is the yes?
Eta is a metric in its two arguments.
Here. Yeah, eta is a metric, but the bracket.
Sorry, it's symmetric. The question is it symmetric?
Yeah, eta is symmetric. It's a metric. It's a symmetric pairing. Okay. It cannot be all positive. You can prove that. It has to have So let me.
What goes wrong if it's all positive?
We're going to work out some elements. In some sense, it goes back to that. That is, if you find a way to embed TM, there's a way to embed TM into your bundle. There should be always a way to embed TM into your bundle such that TM is completely isotropic with respect to that metric. Okay, so that is the bundle metric restricted to TM in a naive way is zero, which is what we find. Okay, and so which is very reminiscent of quantum mechanics. We know that. We know that if you have a phase space, you know the symplectic structure restricted to P is zero, the symplectic structure restricted to Q is zero, but it's really the pairing between the two, which is not. And here, this metric has exactly the same property, but it's not a symplectic pairing, it's a symmetric one. So I was about to say something about, let's see some consequences of this axiom. So, same thing, if you demand this identity, you can check is not tensorial. That is, if you take x into f of x, you get differential identity. So if you put together Jacobi identity 1 and 2, you get a condition on the anchoring. So the anchoring cannot be arbitrary. The anchoring means that, so suppose I take a bracket of two sections in my bundle, and then I project it with my anchoring. Okay? This should be equal to the Lie bracket. Px and Pys are usual derivative, okay? And that follows from 1 and 2. Okay, so that's 1, 2 prime, if you want. Now, there's another condition that follows from 1 and 2, which is a little bit more subtle, which is the fact that, which is the fact that I just said that there is an anchoring map here, so I can construct some notion of differential on my manifold dA acting on F, which is pi A dAF, right? This is some kind of, so D of F is an element of, it's a section of my bundle. Okay, so if I have an anchoring map, I have a way to lift differential a section of the bundle. And what happens is that the conditions of compatibility implies that dBg is equal to zero. So this is the condition of isotropy, if you want. Okay? So essentially, it says that eta df dg is equal to zero. So this is what I was saying, is that differential along the manifold, you know, creates vectors which are just isotropic. Okay? And in the mathematical physics literature, this is called the strong constraints condition. So there's a geometry, what I'm saying here is there's a geometry of what the base looks like from the point of view of the big metric, from the point of view of the bundle metric. Space is an isotropic manifold. It's a Lagrangian, okay? Manifold. So which is very reminiscent of quantum mechanics, but we are now in the metric context. Another property that follows from these axioms is the fact if you play a little bit between 3 and 4, you can show that this object, the bracket, is in fact a total derivative of the metric. Okay, that's something you can work through. And then it also shows that the bracket XX is is in the left center of the bracket. Oh, okay, I know all of that sounds weird, but now let me say something about symmetry. So recover, why do we have a bracket? We have a bracket because we want to define this object, okay? This object is what? It's somehow that we have a vector, x, and we have an operator, which is called the Lie derivative, or the derivative, that acts on other objects, okay? So, you know, it's clear that if you want these things to be an action, it better satisfy Lx. Ly is L of my big bracket. Okay, this is what it means that I have a Lie algebra. I have a set of labels that, you know, when I commute these things, I get an algebra. Okay, but in fact, I don't need to get a Lie algebra because the Lie algebra setting is very strange. It's saying that the action of X on Y, so, you know, I have an object X that acts on Y. There is absolutely no physical reason that this action should be equal to the action of y on x. X and y are different, so it could be that an action of one object on the other might not be equal to the action of the other guys, or the retroaction with a minus sign. So in a Lie case, you demand that, and you demand that for no good physical reason. You demand that because you're starting from a presentation of the commutator where this is true. But if you were thinking about the concept of symmetry, there's absolutely no reason that a vector acts on another vector in the same way that it retroacts on the opposite way. That's an extra unnecessary axiom. All you need to exponentiate the notion of symmetry is that the Lie bracket closes. And you can let go of that. And this is really all what Lode does, and it opens up, so the Lode paper is like 30 years old, and it opened up a completely new area of algebra, like Lie paper opened up a new area of algebra. It's a very rich, a new concept of geometry, and I think we're just starting, now that you have a new concept of geometry, it's natural to demand whether we have a new concept of physics that respects this geometry. Maybe this is all I want to say about that. So, okay. Or maybe, okay, one example. So the most famous example is called the courant algebraoid. It's the example.
But here x and y are vector fields on the base again, yeah? So
they are section of a vector bundle. No, x and y, okay. Anytime I write x and y, these are sections of a vector bundle.
Yeah,
they are big vectors.
Mm-hmm. So not on the tangent bundle. Okay.
No, no, no. They I mean, pi of x is on the tangent. They contain the tangent bundle, but they are bigger. No, no. So what I'm doing here is I'm generalizing differential calculus. I'm generalizing the mere Cartan calculus, if you want. I'm generalizing the notion of what it means to translate. Okay, and I can translate along any you know, along different sets of vectors.
Laurent,
yes.
So you wrote a sub e on the, in the middle.
Yes.
On the right, but you mean the sub e is everywhere?
No, no, no. These are operator, right? These guys are endomorphism of e. So these are usual matrices, right? So they form a usual Lie algebra. There's nothing fancy about that, right? This is an operator. It takes a section, it maps onto a section. So this is the usual commutator. And this is my, algebraic commutator. So now I really do mean that, okay? In Cartan calculus, it's not obvious why, you know, yeah.
Probably means that in the top line, you need an E on the commutator.
No, 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 this is the commutator of operator. Like I take, this is Lx. No,
but when you define.
This is Lx, Ly, minus Ly, Lx.
When you define Lx.
Oh, here, sorry. Oh, here, yeah, totally. Sorry, yeah. Oh, excuse me.
So your point on the last line is that if you had assumed that last condition, that would imply that that bracket on E was anti-symmetric.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas all the Jacobi tells you is that L of XX has to vanish, of course. Yes, that's okay. That there's a kernel to the action. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that Lx of yy, Lx of yy is not zero, okay? Because my bracket is not symmetric. So what it means is that the kernel, if you want, this symmetric pairing, form a representation of my Lie algebra. So there's a Lie algebra of Lie derivative, and there's a natural representation attached to it. And this representation, I don't have time to go to it, in general Lode algebra, is associated with a fermionic representation, and it's a fermionic representation that satisfies classically, if you want, the quantum anomaly condition. So there's some kind of interesting geometry going on, but let me give you an example of the most famous one is the big tangent bundle, which is the guy I was the most interested in, because this is the guy that merged together GR and quantum mechanics. Okay, and there's a bracket you can write on this object, which is called the Courant bracket. So here, what are my big vectors? My big vectors are vector field plus forms. Okay, and the big bracket xy, if I call y plus beta, okay, it's the usual Lie bracket for the vectors plus the Lie derivative of x acting on alpha and minus I of y acting on beta, acting on the alpha. Okay, so what is that big bracket doing? It's essentially telling you that the big bracket of two vectors, well, it's the same thing as the Lie bracket. Nothing surprising. The big bracket of a vector on a form, well, it's simply the Lie derivative. So this is the action, nothing surprising. But now there's a retroaction. I'm saying now forms, so vectors act on forms, we know that. But if you want a consistent geometry, you have now to have a notion where forms act on vector. That's the new part of the action. And forms act on vector in that way. Okay, the alpha, okay? And then what is the pairing here? Well, the pairing is the most natural pairing you can have. Is that the pairing between x and y is the canonical pairing between forms and vector. So it's ix beta plus iy alpha. Okay, so it relates to what Kirill was talking about. This is the pairing in the big tangent bundle, which is it's an ODD pairing. Okay, where D is the dimension of space-time, if you want.
It's slightly misleading to say forms act on vector fields if the answer is a form.
Yeah.
And so they don't really.
And then alpha and beta. Yeah, you're right. So maybe that's what I'm saying is that there's a notion of Lie derivative along alpha, okay, that appears. And if you think about it, this is a little bit why there's some quantum mechanical element, because what is in quantum mechanics, what do? You give me a function, I can think of it, d of that function is a form, and then suddenly I decide that associated with a form, there is a vector field, the Hamiltonian vector field. So you know, that's the difference between, so in some sense, you know, here, naively, what I'm thinking is that this is d over dq, and this is d over dp, right? So I'm unifying somehow the, so this is kind of a natural geometrical setting for phase space that respect the geometrical setting. This is where I was coming from quantum gravity. In quantum gravity, if you think about unifying quantum and gravity, and you think about relativity, and you ponder about this identity that c square over g, it's m over r, it's a tension, okay? And you ponder over the fact that the equivalence principle tells you that in nature there is a fundamental tension. That is, that tension is the same for every single object in the universe. Then you're led to the idea that this tension, this universal tension, should play exactly the same role as the universal velocity of light. It should be uniform. It should be a conversion factor between energy and momenta. So it should unify the two. And we saw that in Gerhard Toft about delta U equal, you know, delta P F omega, right? Where there was this tension appearing here. So once you have a universal tension, interestingly, string theory doesn't assume the equivalence principle because there's the dilaton. So it said the equivalence principle is wrong, but it does say there's still a universal tension. So, and this universal tension is a string tension. So both quantum gravity and string theory, once you focus on this universal tension, leads to the same geometry. And this Courant algebra, it's the first time I see a geometrical structure that appears both from the study of quantum gravity and from the study of string. It appears also very naturally in string theory because there's a fundamental tension. So in string theory, you do need to kind of unify. The presence of a fundamental tension forces you to understand that the geometrical setting unifies, you know, T and T star, if you want, momentum and position.
Question, but mathematically, this symplectic structure on T plus T star, does it play any role in Courant algebra?
It plays a role in the Courant algebra. It doesn't play any role. It plays a role in the geometry of string. This is what we call bond geometry, but I'm not going to talk about it. So once we have that, how do we put a metric and how do we write down an action, okay? And this is the two things I want to say. So, so let me summarize what I was saying is that now I have my big bundle. So here, and we see that, you know, eta of, this is what I was saying, eta of xy, it's zero, right? So that's what I was saying, is that the naive embedding of the vector field is completely isotropic, okay? So space-time is a Lagrangian with respect to that metric. So what I was saying is that this condition that dd is there, it means that I have a bundle E. I have an anchoring map between Tm. You know, I have a metric on that bundle, so therefore E is equivalent to T star, so I can reverse the arrow, which means that, I can embed, this is what I was doing here, I take a form and treat it as a vector here, and it turns out that this is an exact sequence. Okay, so this condition here is essentially that these guys squares to zero, and it turns out that what is a metric? A metric. So far, I've talked about the metric like some kind of kinematical metric on the total bundle, but I still want to understand a metric on the base. Okay, in order to get a metric on the base, all I have to do is choose a section of that bundle. Okay, so it's called an Ehresmann connection. It turns out that this is why this concept unified the notion of connection. The gauge connection is an Ehresmann connection, and a metric is also an Ehresmann connection. And the action we're going to write down contains both gauge and gravity because they're both on the same footing. So if I have such an embedding like that, it's clear that I can construct a metric gxy to be eta of s x Sy, and that gives me a metric on the base. Okay, so now so a metric, it's called a generalized metric. Okay, so there's the bundle metric, which is eta, but now I have another one, which is a dynamical metric. A generalized metric is essentially a choice of section S such that M of S is, you know, that the intersection of M of S and M of S orthogonal is empty set. That's what a metric is. Equivalently, you can see that if I can, I can cook up an operator which I call J, which is such that J is plus one on M of S, and J is minus one on M of S orthogonal, and then I can say that a metric is a chiral structure. So a metric equal a chiral structure. And the chiral structure is essentially a map that squares to plus one, okay, and is compatible with the bundle metric. So if for people who are knowledgeable about phase space geometry, this is the same, but essentially where you replace complex by chiral and you replace symplectic by bundle metric, and then you're done. Now that you're done, I have no time to explain you in case, but because I have a bracket, I can define the notion of torsion, and I can define the notion of connection. So a connection now is an object that takes a big vector and acts on another B vector, right? And it should be such that if I multiply by F, it's not linear, but it's linear up to the action of the anchoring map again, okay? And so if I have such an object J, I can construct, usually people call these generalized metrics AYJ. This is what you would do in the symplectic context. Okay. So in this generalized geometry, what I have is I have two metrics. I have the bundle metric eta, and I have the base metric H. Both of them I can lift onto the bundle, and I have the notion of connection, and now I can define the notion of a torsionless connection. Torsionless with respect to that bracket, very important.
Just understand, your connection has nothing to do with the metric. It's an independent concept.
A priori, this is the notion of connection. Now I can ask for the analog of a Levi-Civita connection. Okay, so I can ask for a connection that that is torsionless and preserve both eta and h. Okay, and I can define the notion of curvature tensor, and I can write down an Einstein action, integral of square root h r, if you want. Okay, that Einstein action is an action which is, you know, Einsteinian. But it unifies. It's also depending on the if depending on the nature of the bundle, or it's also Young-Mills, and it turns out that every single one action that was ever written in string theory, every single one of them is always of that type. So I don't know if you know, for me,
integral goes on the,
and integral is on the base. So. Which is quite remarkable. I mean, I was turned off by string theory because there's all these bells and whistles, and any time you go, there's a new form of geometry, and you had new forms of fields, a new form of stuff, and there seems to be no rhyme or reason for what's going on there, and people tell you it's supersymmetry. Here, I can get all the supersymmetric action without ever mentioning supersymmetry. What I'm saying is that the yeah, the bosonic part. So the reason the bosonic part organizes into itself in the way it does is because of low density symmetry, because of generalized diffeomorphism invariance. So, okay, to summarize, what I'm saying is that, we can generalize the notion of symmetry, which leads to a generalized notion of diffeomorphism invariance, and there's a generalized notion of Einstein-Cartan, which is, you know, unified by design, and it's very robust, because I was trying to be very general. There is also a beautiful unification of bosonic and fermionic geometry because of something that Kirill talked about, is that if I look at the spinner bundle of such a bundle, then this object is essentially the space of form on the base times the determinant bundle. Okay? So what it means? It means that I can think of spinners in a bosonic manner as forms. And now the spinner action are simply Chern-Simons type of action. So it achieves somehow, to some extent, the third. that the splitting between boson and fermion is lowered, right? Fermions are simply forms, and that's how I can organize them. So this geometry, anyway, that's all I... Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are a lot of questions.
Okay, not quite a question. A remark. Motivated appearance of T star, well, or T together with T star from your point two, from unification of phase space with Riemannian geometry. Actually,
yeah.
There is another way to motivate why it's T plus T star, because on this space there is an invariant metric.
Yeah.
If you want to have an invariant metric, then you must consider T plus T star because the metric there is automatically invariant under diffeomorphisms.
Yeah, but you could have, it's not the, I mean, there's, you could have extra factors here. So where somehow here, what's happening is that in T plus T star, I have that the kernel, the vertical direction is completely isotropic, which means it's equal to its orthogonal, okay? But in general, that's not the case. In general, it goes like that. So, and then the difference between the kernel and its orthogonal is exactly the gauge group. But now all of that is dynamical. So what I call the gauge group can be quantized. That's the beauty. It's like I can I have a field that decides which part is, and I think this is a field that has no existence in effectivity theory because you cannot even think about it. Right? So in some sense, this goes beyond effectivity theory. It's in a field theory language, but it goes beyond because there's a geometrical element in it that is not, you cannot talk about it in effectivity theory, which is essentially the geometrical element is what is space-time? If I think from my point of view of the bundle, which direction in my bundle I would call space-time? That's a dynamical question. For me, this is a quantum gravity question. The bundle is quantum, it's easy to quantize, but which one of these are internal and which one only are external should not be God-given. That's what goes beneath quantum gravity.
Or basically, I had a remark. So basically, in this example, what I tried to give on Monday is kind of departing from this direction at this top line. Yeah? So when you assume a killing metric,
yeah,
which is non-degenerate.
Yeah, and then you have to have degenerate direction. Yeah, yes.
Point of branch.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. If you don't, if you don't add the,
there might be fiber structure groups which cannot be expressed by an isometric group of some metric, but maybe can be. But eventually, for example, there exists algebras, finite dimensional algebras, whose automorphic group cannot be thought as an isometric group of a metric. So eta in that case might not be a metric, but some other object. Yeah.
Yeah. But these vertical, exactly, that's what I was saying. These vertical directions have to have, when you restrict the metric on them, they have to be null, totally null. That's what you had. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so thank you.
Sorry, I have to.